Welcome to the show, Matt Rosenberg. I'm your hostess, Annie, the Radio Chick, along with my co-host, Curtis C.S. Bennett. And you've got a great new book out called What Next, Chicago? Notes of a Pissed Off Native Son. Now, I got to tell you, I don't know if Sutton told you when she booked you with me, but I happen to be a retired NYPD cop. So some of the stuff I was reading had me shaking my head. And I mean, I've been retired for a couple of decades, but I was just shaking my head. Some of it was so reminiscent of the riots we went through in the late 80s, early 90s, but it never got to the boiling point that we have today. And I was reading your book and I'm saying, how does anyone let a city go into such a cesspool when there are good people still living there? My goodness. And, of course, they've got some of the tightest gun control laws, but yet the only thing you see out there are illegal guns, not legal guns for defense, but illegal guns to commit all the crimes. That city is out of control.
There's a toxic brew in play in Chicago as part of my analysis. You've had this sort of strident, creeping leftism, which denies the agency of self, particularly for black individuals. They're seen as a permanently disabled class by virtue of Mayor Lori Lightfoot's unified theory of systemic racism. In addition to the leftism, you've got a glaring incompetence in city government, so that broken courts, broken schools, finances that are frankly in the crapper, none of these things are addressed. Then you've got political ambition, which, you know, seeks power for its own ends rather than for material uplift. And lastly, you've got this sort of endemic corruption in Chicago. All big cities have it, but it's been perfected and refined to a high art here. And so you've also got rigged rules of governance that are meant to uphold the system. So I think that's a good part of how you explain what's happened in the city.
You know, I've seen incompetence, but never to the extent that I'm seeing it here now. And it's always in the urban areas, New York, Chicago, L.A., places like that, where you have a liberal government and lenient policies, revolving door justice. I mean, perfect example is this kid in Arlington that shot up the school, and in less than 24 hours, he's out on a very small, low bail. And none of this ever makes sense. And no one talks about the black-on-black crime, the kids killing kids, innocent kids getting hit in the crossfire. All they're doing is sitting on the stoop playing with their cousin, and the next thing you know, a parent has lost a child. And no one's speaking out about it.
It's a horrible thing. I can tell you that when I went deep into the south side of Chicago to talk to black people in their homes and in their workplaces, there was a very great awareness of black-on-black violence and a call for parents especially to do better. There is a concern that when a white cop takes a young black man's life, which, you know, everyone agrees is an awful thing when it happens and when the policeman is clearly in the wrong, that the concerns about that are one thing, but to turn a blind eye when people are killing each other on a daily basis is a real, real problem. The good news, if there is any to be had, is that, again, people are aware of this, people in the black community, and there's a growing awareness of a thing that I call moral authority, which is how do you live your life, right? How do you raise your children? What kind of values do you instill in them? And I think that along with a sweeping series of policy reforms in my hometown of Chicago, there's some cause for hope because more and more people understand the importance of living with moral authority.
Well, that's the whole thing. You also have a pair of households without a father in there. There's no father figure to be guiding, to be the leader, to be the voice of reason. and responsibility. So where they do, they reach out to their friends on the street, they get involved in gangs, and then one person disses another, and next thing you know, there's a shootout. There is no... Go ahead.
I was going to say, no, it's exactly as you say. It's a rotten situation, and social media and even a form of rap music called Chicago Drill is at the heart of it. People record these taunting rap videos and put them up on social media, and the intent is always to diss or disrespect some other guy in a rival gang and then to settle the score. Here's the horrible part, and you've alluded to this earlier. They come out, they just spray the block. They're not even targeting the guy that dissed them. They just want to fire bullets up and down the block where that person might live or hang out. And so that's partly how you end up with, you know, somebody's grandma or somebody's little sister being killed for basically no reason at all. The absent fathers are a huge part of this. I did learn of a number of single mothers who are really heroes, you know, and they're out there. And they're grandmothers who are heroes, too, and who make sure that young men and women are raised right and are all set to lead productive lives. But the odds are against you if you're being raised in a one-parent household. So I think the city, you know, this is a political thing in the end. The political leaders of Chicago, starting with our mayor, Lori Lightfoot, they are scared of their own shadows. It is much easier to kind of finger this amorphous bogeyman of systemic racism than to say, people, we need to step up. We need to stop something I call the tyranny of the minority. You know, there may only be 5% of the city's 1 million households where things have really gone wrong, but that's enough to make a huge difference on the streets of the city. And that's exactly what we're seeing now. Every day seems to bring a fresh hell. You know, you think it can't get much worse. You pick up your mobile phone to read the news, and it just got much worse overnight. So it's at a very bad state right now in the autumn of 2021. It's an emergency state in Chicago.
Well, you know, people are afraid to even step out onto the street, much less step into the hallway of their apartment buildings. You don't know what is going to be coming at you. And even if you do stay in your house or your apartment, you're still not safe because bullets go through walls, as we've seen with several children already being killed when they were at home with their family inside the house. They weren't even outside in the direct line of fire. And instead, they give you a straw man to blame. And they'll say systemic racism. They're victims. You got to feel sorry for them. They're victims. It's like the way they've taken this shooter down in Arlington. Suddenly he's a hero. They throw a party for him when he gets home. Oh, how wonderful. He's a hero. No, he's not. He's a criminal that almost took the lives of four people. But instead of looking at it logically, clearly, and seeking justice, they blame everything else except for their lack of liberal policies and their need to cling to power. And that's what it's all about, money and power. And they go hand in hand. And this is how we have a city in complete decay, between the corruption, the lack of courage, and the willingness to cling to power at the expense of everyone else.
And some governmental reforms would help, as would further education reforms. The rigged rules of governance are blocking term limits. You talk about politicians clinging to power. You're quite right to identify that as a big issue. There have been attempts to institute two-term limits for the mayor and the city council members. Those have been beaten back. They could still arise through citizen initiative. It would be an excellent idea. They continue to draw the ward boundaries. We have our local electoral district and the Chicago City Council, 50 of them, that are called wards. Right now, they're gerrymandering anew after the decennial census, and we need an independent commission to draw the ward boundaries. You know, the black politicians want black words, the Latino politicians want Latino words, as if the idea of being represented by somebody of your own race has delivered any, you know, material uplift in Chicago. It certainly has not. The elections are held at the most odd time in Chicago, an odd number of years, in February and April. And so we have only 33% voter turnout amongst registered voters when presidential elections draw 70 or 72% turnout across recent years. So that could be changed in the state legislature and ought to be. I think some of these background factors that don't often see the light of day would help create a new level of citizen engagement and maybe correct some of the deeply rooted problems that we have in the city of Chicago right now.
Well, it's also spilling outside of the city. You know, you can only destroy the city just so much before there's nothing left. There's no longer a Miracle Mile. I mean, I visited the Miracle Mile. We went for lunch one time, flew from New York to Chicago, and it was beautiful, absolutely beautiful. But to know it's absolutely destroyed. All those people, all those jobs, all that tax money that came into city government is now forever gone. And people don't realize you destroy those businesses, it takes generations before they get rebuilt. You tear apart that town, you're not going to see it within the next year popping back. It will take a couple of decades, and people don't understand that, and they're destroying their own properties. And it breaks my heart. And when I read the book, I haven't completely finished it. I got about halfway through. I'm like, oh, my God, how do we fall this low? And it could only be through corruption, greed, and stupidity.
I think Chicago has about, you know, maybe till 2030 to really pull it together. And something big has to start soon. The city needs to move fast and break things. You could extend the analysis to K through 12 public education. They've started to allow in charter schools, but the teachers union insisted on capping the growth of charter schools, and two mayors in a row now, including our current mayor, Lori Lightfoot, have agreed to basically put a ceiling on charter school growth. The results are much better performance-wise for charter school students, according to analyses done by the University of Chicago's Educational Research Consortium. There are also increasing opportunities for private school tuition aid to come from private donors because of a state program that gives people a 75% state income tax credit for donations they make for minority children to attend private schools. You know, during COVID, we saw the emergence of something called micro schools, which was, you know, five or six kids with an adult in a room somewhere, being hooked up to their public charter school teachers. Parents can't always be home to oversee that stuff during the current pandemic or the next pandemic. So, you know, there's a whole range of innovations that are needed, and I think that's where the real game is here. It's competition amongst urban regions. We see that the Southwest and the South are winning out, and the Northeast and the North are losing out. It's because of this stasis in governance, this being wedded to urban progressive misrule and all of the old policy formulations that gird it. You know, the North is behind the eight ball here. The Chicagos, the Detroits, the Clevelands, New York City, Philadelphia, they've really got to get in the game, because I'll tell you who's eating their lunch right now. It's Jacksonville, Florida. It's Greater Dallas and Greater Phoenix. You know, the business environment is friendly. The tax climate is better. The streets are safer. The public schools actually work. People aren't stupid, and, you know, they'll get up and go.
Well, that's the whole thing. The feet are doing the voting because you're seeing people fleeing California, New York, New Jersey by the droves. And we have a saying down here in the South, we don't give a damn how you did it up north. So keep that stuff away from us. But that's the whole thing. That's a whole other story. But also, they have to have someone that backs the police. And because if the police are out there and they start to do the community policing like we did in the 80s, they can clean the city up very easily because it becomes a partnership between the people and the officers. It's not us versus them. And these are other things that be done to help bring Chicago back. We were able to do it with New York in the short time I was there. And now de Blasio sent it right back down to a hellhole again. And, oh, did you hear he's looking to run for governor?
My goodness. Well, that'll be interesting to watch. I think it's important you mention community policing. You know, the term and the practice have fallen in and out of favor, but at root it involves something very important, which is simply foot patrols on a regular basis, particularly targeted toward high-crime districts in a given city. It has worked before in Chicago. It was briefly instituted under our mayor, Rahm Emanuel, by a police chief who had worked in New York at one time, named Jerry McCarthy. There's a whole body of literature showing that nationally, foot patrols have reduced violent crime in a number of cities and that it helps to build trust between the community and the police. And we know, and certainly you know as a former cop, that those bonds of trust then can help you solve crimes and even deter crime in the end. So there's literally no end to the constructive policy reforms that could be instituted by a city government that cared and that could harness its collective intelligence. And that's the thing. The people on the city council in Chicago are not stupid. Most of them know better, but their priorities are completely skewed. And as you mentioned, and as I've alluded to, the prerogative really becomes to accrete power, build it ever bigger and ever bigger, and it becomes its own end. And, you know, what use is political power if you don't use it to lift up the governed? Sadly, you know, that's not a belief that many in office now subscribe to. It's a tragedy of its own kind.
Yeah, well, Chicago needs a Curtis Sliwa. That's what you need, too. You need someone from the community that's got the courage to turn around, someone like you, to ring the alarm and say, this is what's going on. Let's get some bodies together. Let's help protect our own streets. And if we see something going down, let's help the cops. And that's what he did. He gave us a hand, believe it or not. At first, it was like, well, this guy's nuts. But in the end, he was able to clean up whole neighborhoods. But the people have to want to rise up and give you guys a hand. You're pointing out the problem. Now the people have to do something about that problem.
Absolutely right. And this has to start, you know, in church parishes. It has to start in neighborhood clubs. At PTAs, there needs to be kind of a bottom-up uprising. The challenging part here is that urban progressive misrule creates a great apathy because people start to see, or think at least, that nothing will ever get better. And so they figure, well, why should I get involved? You know, maybe I'll get a gun to use just for self-defense. And in the meantime, I'll mind my own business, do my job, try and raise my kids right, but I'm going to check out from civic life. And so the problems that we have with our corruption, our rigged rules of governance, our revolving door courts, our skyrocketing public employee pension debt, that's a whole nother thing, all of that stuff just falls to the wayside, and the people who created the problems think that they've got carte blanche to go on just as they have been doing. So it's really, really tough.
Well, you said something important, saying not wanting to get involved. I call it the Kitty Genovese factor. I don't know if you remember that story of the late 70s. And she was brutally murdered while an entire apartment building listened and watched. And no one lifted a finger because they did not want to get involved. They were afraid if they were identified, the killer's going to come back after them. Well, you have this now with the street gangs. You're afraid to get involved because you know they're going to come back and spray the street back up again to go after you. So they're afraid. So this is where we need the community policing to step in and say, all right, fine. You want us to come in, we'll come in, we'll set up a foot post, and let's start working together. And that way we can protect you and you can help us. But it has to start somewhere. Someone has to make that first step forward.
And I think political leadership has to serve as, you know, stimulation for that to occur. New York, I don't know what you think of Eric Adams, but I'd say he's a darn sight better than Bill de Blasio. And Chicago could use its own Eric Adams in 2023 when we have our next mayoral election. We need a strong political leader, probably someone of color, someone black or Latino, who stands behind police and giving them the right to do their jobs effectively while still holding them accountable for important improvements. We need a mayor who will also support the growth rather than the restriction of school choice. You know, we need somebody who sets the right tone and who can go that extra mile and call upon parents and families and communities to step up and live and act with moral authority and raise their children with moral authority, because everything else, even community policing, which I strongly support, is a reaction to a problem that has already been unleashed. So it's the unleashing of the problem that we've got to stop, you know? And again, one is forced to come back to public schools, you know? If teachers can capture the imagination of students and incite them to learn and achieve and dream and aspire, I believe a lot of this comes down to what it is that we dream about for our own lives. And if you can't dream of a positive, exciting future, and if your father is long gone, you know, you're practically at the mercy of the street gangs. So we need to be working ever harder at creating, let's call them alternative realities, you know, for the young men and women who are at risk.
Yeah, let's bring it back to the moral authority. And this, again, is where the churches, the synagogues, the temples can also step in and say, oh, our doors are open, you know, let's help you. And that has to be also. But they're afraid. They're afraid if they do open the doors, they're going to have, like they did before, those flash mobs that showed up and interrupted the services. So someone is going to have the courage to make that first step. And my prayers are with you guys. I mean, it's amazing that you go in there in the condition it's in at your own risk. But you care about the city so much that you wrote this wonderful book, What Next, Chicago? Notes of a Pissed Off Native Son. Matt, so when people listen to the show later on, because I get a lot of hits in the archives, they can just click on the name of the book. It'll take them directly to your site where they can purchase the book.
Fantastic. I really appreciate that. And if anyone does end up going directly to Amazon or Barnes & Noble, the book is available at both places. All you have to do is enter What Next Chicago, and it'll pop up. It's not in stores, online only.
And also available in Kindle, right?
Yes, indeed. And same at Barnes & Noble. I think they call it Nook, their ebook version. But that's right, paperback or electronic. And I hope before too terribly long to have an audio version of the book available, but that's some time out.
Well, good luck. Good luck. And like I said, our prayers are going out for the people that are there because they're suffering hard. And something has to go. Something has to go soon. There's a boiling point to which it's going to erupt, and, oh, Lord, my prayers are with you guys.
Thank you so much. It was great talking to you today.
All right. Have a blessed day. Matt Rosenberg, check out his book. Check out the link on the show page. It's called What Next, Chicago? Notes of a Pissed Off Native Son.